You're tuned in to the Awesomeo NBA Strategy Show.
I can't get over that.
Who is it?
I have no idea. And we are live. Welcome to the NBA Strategy Show. It is Monday, January 10th. I am Josh Engelman. I am joined by Adam Scherer. We are brought to you by Yahoo Fantasy Sports. We've got a seven-game NBA slate today, and I don't think it was supposed to be seven games. This might be like some rescheduled stuff today because I did not have this many in my sheet when I first started, but it's exciting. Seven's about as good as you're going to get. I think it's sort of the perfect size of big, but not too big, small, but not too small. So this one should work. Before you get in here and do anything, hit that like button, subscribe to the channel, hit the notification bell so you know when everything goes live. Adam, how was your weekend?
It was good. Ended up playing NFL, even though I didn't really want to. Had a really good NFL day, so that was nice. Hopefully carry it over to this week and win some NBA.
There you go. Can't ask for much more there. I know you and I were sweating some NFL throughout the day. Well, we were paying attention to the NFL. I wasn't sweating all of that much. You, on the other hand, did succeed. Pulled the 70K in the afternoon slate, the slate that you told me that I should register, that I did register, and it got me nowhere.
Yeah, just wanted to, you know, make sure I got an extra 150 dead entries in there.
You're welcome. You're welcome for that. Had to pad the stats a little bit for you. Anyway, we got a lot to talk about. Some of these games, it seems like par for the course as of late. Some of these games seem like games that you want like all of the game, and then some are basically a full cross off. And that is, generally speaking, fun and scary. And we'll end up talking about like the Boston Celtics, who scare the hell out of me on a day like today, like they did last time. But I'm ready to dive in if you are.
Yeah, for sure. Let's go.
All righty. First game up on the docket. The Milwaukee Bucks are 2.5-point favorites in Charlotte. 234 total. That's 10 points higher than any other game and basically 20 higher than most of the games on this slate. So we're already mildly interested. We're pretty much interested in whatever team plays Charlotte anyway, given their pace and their defensive abilities. This one's even more interesting because Milwaukee is still without Jrue Holiday, Grayson Allen, George Hill, potentially Pat Connaughton. It appears Dante DiVincenzo is back for today, or at the very least off the injury report, and then still no Brooke Lopez, but that's not all that crazy. So let's start with the man, Giannis Antetokounmpo, 11-5 on FanDuel, 12-2 on DraftKings. He's 19% owned on DK, 34% on FanDuel. I think he's one of the best plays you're going to find on FanDuel. I don't think that he's like a problematic play on DraftKings or anything like that, but I got him at 1.84 FanDuel points per minute in this matchup. I don't know what else to do other than just say that Giannis looks incredible here.
Yeah, I think he looks fantastic even on DraftKings at 12K. We had talked before, it's not even so much that with Holiday being out, his rates go up, even though you do see a little bit of a bump. It's that the playing time goes up. He's averaged almost 35 minutes per game in the games that he's played without Holiday and with Middleton since last year. Last game, two games ago, the first game without Holiday, or this stretch, I should say, without Holiday, he was in some foul trouble. But last game, you saw what I expect to be pretty much a normal Giannis rotation. He played 36.7 minutes. In competitive games, I think you're getting 36-plus from Giannis, at least for as long as Jrue is out. And that's a ton of playing time for the second best point per dollar or point per minute guy in the league. He's in a fantastic matchup against Charlotte. I think he looks great even at 12K.
Yeah, I give him 34 minutes. I get nervous when I go to 36 on like the Giannis Jokic types because things just start to look
crazy.
Yeah, I don't
think you should project 36 because I think that's kind of a everything went according to plan. He played 36.
Yeah.
You know, 34 gives you it factors in the foul trouble, the blowouts, the other stuff that happens to keep him lower than they would like.
And he's still a 62 fantasy point projection for me right now. So I'm happy to get there. I think he's so much easier to get to on FanDuel where he's small forward, power forward. Today, the center eligibility for Giannis is basically meaningless because there's 800 and really good center options for DK. So he's sort of, in the grand scheme of things, he's sort of power forward only, but not that it matters. His raw upside is as big as it's going to get. I find Chris Middleton to be fine. I don't really have much of a take here. The guy that I actually have my eye on most, it's more of a FanDuel play. Bobby Portis is 6K power forward center on FanDuel, pulling 49% ownership right now, which I think is warranted. He's just center eligible on DraftKings, 6,800, pulling about the same ownership as Giannis. So how do you feel about this Middleton and Portis duo?
I love Portis again. You and I had talked about it the other day when they waived Boogie Cousins, that there was no guarantee that Portis started playing more than 28 to 30 minutes, but that it was really likely, because with Cousins, it was kind of just like, okay, he's going to get his 16 to 18 minutes somewhere in there, and that's going to come at the expense of Portis. Once you take Cousins out, I don't think they have the same impetus to play Mamu Kulishvili or Shemi or Thanasis or any of these other guys. And we've seen that. Two games ago, Portis played 32 minutes. That was a blowout where he lost about 4.5 minutes to garbage time. Last game, he played 37 minutes against Charlotte in a game that, you know, went down to the wire. So I think it's very likely you continue to see more playing time from Portis. He's still pretty inexpensive. He's a great fantasy producer. I really like him.
All right. Yeah, we're on the same page there. Then we get to the rest of this team, because wanting to play Giannis and Middleton and Portis is pretty obvious in a matchup against Charlotte, especially when, you know, one of the stars from Milwaukee isn't going to be around. Who else do you find interesting in this spot? I think Jordan Wara, 5,400 on FanDuel, 5K on DraftKings, is probably like the next guy up. I don't have like a big time take on Wara. He's just sort of like a guy in a matchup that looks good. I don't know if I get to anybody else. I don't know how many minutes DiVincenzo can actually play here. Probably not enough to matter. If Connaughton is in theory, he could play a ton. I gave him 28 minutes. He looks passable at best. So I'm really mostly only focused to Giannis, Middleton, and Portis. Do you see anything else here for Milwaukee?
No, that's pretty much it. I mean, Middleton, you know, I think looks good. He doesn't get the same kind of bump without Holiday that Giannis does, but he still looks good. It's still a good matchup. If Connaughton's out, I mean, like, I guess if Wara is still in the starting lineup, he looks fine at 5K. But the thing you need to keep in mind is that he also sees a drop in usage when he plays alongside Giannis. So you can't project him the same as for the same production that you would if he was coming off the bench. But other than that, I mean, I think it's pretty much Giannis and Portis, and then everyone else kind of just like filters in.
Yeah. I'm figuring DiVincenzo, even if he's playing, is playing like 20 minutes or something like that. He's barely been out there all year. So I don't have much else to talk about here, but yeah, Giannis and Portis in particular, I think looking really, really good. DraftKings, I think these guys look sort of similar relative to salary, definitely preferring Portis and Giannis. On FanDuel though, Giannis and Portis are miles ahead just from a salary standpoint and positional eligibility standpoint. Sign me up for the Bucks. Then we go to Charlotte. Again, massive total here. The problem is, one, I don't know what the Charlotte rotation is doing. I know it from a player's standpoint. I don't know it from a minute standpoint any longer. We've got LaMelo Ball projected for 20% ownership on FanDuel, where he's 8,400. I think that's more than warranted. After that, everybody's like no more than 10% owned. It's basically like a lot of guys in the 6 to 8 range. No one truly standing out. And I'm not so sure that I have anybody that stands out either. I find this team really difficult to project right now. I don't really know who's going to get the biggest bulk of minutes. I gave Bridges 34. I gave Ball, Rozier, and Hayward 32 apiece. That could be slightly light. I just don't know what to do with Charlotte right now.
That's how I approach it as well. I think Bridges basically should be the guy projected for the most minutes, and I think it should be like 34, 35. I think I'll end up at 34 as well. Ball at 32 seems reasonable. Played like 26 last game, but you know, 2 games ago, I think played 35. It's tough because like they have kicked Ish Smith out of the rotation, but you still have a bunch of guys that are playing, you know, a decent amount of minutes off the bench. So any game, it kind of can change. But I think expecting around 34 from Bridges, around 32 from Ball, Rozier, Hayward makes sense.
Yeah, does anybody stand out for you then for Charlotte, or is it just kind of mix and match type stuff? Because this is a monster total in this game, and they're only 2-point dogs. Like, we shouldn't be expecting a competitive game with, I mean, a Charlotte team that is loaded with good to very good per minute fantasy guys, where they're all like 0.9 to, you know, depending on like LaMelo, like a 1.3 type guy. There's not any landmines in the Charlotte lineup from a DFS perspective.
Yeah, I think that It's mostly just rotating through. I would say Bridges at 7,400 and LaMelo at 9,300 are the first two I will most likely get to. But okay. Rozier, Hayward, even a $4,800 PJ Washington, you know, hoping that you get the game where he plays 26 minutes, which is certainly on the table. Those guys are all fine as well. But I think Bridges and Ball are where I get to first.
Yeah, that's really the problem. They can – there's like – PJ Washington could get the extra minutes. Kelly Oubre can be projected for 24 and play 30. Cody Martin could be projected for 22 and play 28. Mason Plumlee can just play 28 because PJ Washington picks up 3 fouls in 5 seconds. Like, so many of these guys have a massive range in their potential playing time. It's like the team that needs the most additional randomness.
It's tricky.
And like for LaMelo on FanDuel, 8,400 just isn't the right price tag for him. So I understand why he's pulling the ownership. I wish I had more to add here, but it's sort of just like you probably have someone from Charlotte in just about every lineup you make. And that someone could be one of 7 or 8 guys.
And so someone asked what was up with LaMelo's minutes. I mean, last game it was fouls. Picked up his second, third, and fourth fouls within the first 4.5 minutes of the third quarter, so he went to the bench for a while. Picked up his fifth in the fourth, went back to the bench. So, yeah, I mean, it's on average, I think you're getting around 32 to 33 from LaMelo. It's just they have so many interchangeable pieces on this team that any given game, the playing time for individual players depends on things like how they're playing, how the entire unit is doing, fouls. You know, it's just pretty volatile.
It really is. It's a great game to attack, though. With Milwaukee having very obvious plays, Charlotte, you definitely, like, if it's competitive, you want some pieces from Charlotte on the opposite side, likely. So I really like the idea of attacking this Milwaukee-Charlotte game. Anything else for this one?
No, I'm with you. Just a lot of good pieces here. I think the priorities would be Giannis and Portis from the Milwaukee side, and then Bridges and LaMelo from the Charlotte side.
There we go. NFL strategy show recap edition coming up next, 11 a.m. That will be Adam on that one. We've got an NFL best ball strategy coming up at noon. Adam, are you going to be playing some playoff best ball?
No.
Interesting. Okay. I like the mechanism for it. I do some playoff contests with some friends and stuff, but I might throw a couple lineups in from a best ball perspective.
Yeah. I mean, I say that like I had given no thought to it. I haven't been drafting for it. It was just one of those things where like, I think that there's, for sure, strategy. Like, I know, because you could draft, like, you know, a week or two ago. And so there was a lot of strategy. It was just something I didn't feel like putting the time into.
Fair enough. We got the Awesome-O betting show at 1 p.m., the Prize Picks College Football show at 3:30, and then we get into the NBA pre-show at 4:30. Adam will be back for the deeper dive at 5. I will be back for Live Before Lock at 6. But we're not done at that point. College football Live Before Lock for the national title game, 7 p.m. Eastern time tonight. So make sure you're checking that one out as well. NBA and NHL player projections are free. That should help you out. So head to awesomeo.com and check out that free content if you're looking to play. From Milwaukee, Charlotte, we go to Utah at Detroit. The Jazz are 11.5-point favorites at the Pistons, 222.5 total. Still a bunch of guys out for Utah. No Rudy Gobert, no Joe Ingles, no Rudy Gay, no Malik Fitz or Elijah Hughes. So lots to like here for Utah. Let's start with the clear chalk play of the day. Hassan Whiteside, 5,300 on FanDuel, 5,200 on DraftKings. He is 46% owned on FanDuel and 40% owned on DraftKings. With the amount of center talent that's out there, like I clearly like Hassan Whiteside a lot today. I don't necessarily know if he's going to be the guy that I go as crazy for. Spoiler alert, it's probably going to be Yusuf Nurkic.
Yeah, that's kind of the thing. And this is really the third time we've seen this with Whiteside, but now the salary's at least come up. He's disappointed in both of his starts so far, but he's still clearly a really, really good play. He played about 30 minutes in the first start. Last game, he played 26 minutes. It's really surprising how poorly he's played. But for the season, he's averaged 1.2 DraftKings points per minute. So I don't think you should, or anybody should just be looking at this and saying like, oh yeah, Whiteside doesn't produce whatever. It's just two random bad games. So he's still a very, very high upside option. He's still clearly underpriced, but I agree with you. There's a lot of ownership coming in here. And because of the position, even if Whiteside has a good score for his salary. Like if Whiteside gets 32 DraftKings points, for example, it's relatively likely that that's not even that useful, especially because now at 5,200, you are talking about at least a reasonable salary. You know, 3,500, even if he disappoints, like the first start he made, somebody gave me shit on Twitter because I had said to play Whiteside at 3,500 and he didn't do well. But then you go and look and he was in all 10 of the top 10 lineups on DraftKings because he allowed you to get everyone else into your lineup. So even the fact that he only scored 20 points didn't matter because it let you get to LeBron and, you know, whoever else was on that slate. So
yeah,
it's not that type of thing anymore. Like at 5,200, it's still a good value, but it's not necessarily opening the door for you to just play whoever you want around him. So I think that he's still an excellent play, but I'm with you just in the sense that you are limited how much you can play because of the position. And if he's going to get a lot of ownership, it's definitely a spot to consider just taking on, you know, some other really, really good centers. Like if you go Nurkic plus Portis, and Whiteside, there's a good chance that if Whiteside scores like 32 points, Whiteside or Nurkic, Portis, others just kind of make him irrelevant.
Oh yeah, I mean there's so many additional options. Miles Turner, Jakob Poeltl, Joel Embiid, Christian Wood, the Cleveland guys, obviously Nurkic that we haven't mentioned yet. Like there's plenty of guys that can do the exact same thing as Hassan Whiteside today, but still a good play, still a guy that I without question want to have in a decent chunk of lineups. But 40% on DraftKings, 45% on FanDuel might be a little bit higher than I'm looking for. They came out in my sims in like the low 20s area, and I think that's, I'm feeling a little bit better there. Speaking of guys in the 20s area of FanDuel, Donovan Mitchell is 40% owned on FanDuel. He's 8,500 point guard, shooting guard. Feel free to just jam that in as much as you would like. That price tag is super low for Donovan Mitchell. 9,400 on DraftKings isn't all that crazy, but we're also getting 20%-ish ownership to Mike Conley. I'm not a fan of that one all that much. Jordan Clarkson's around 15%. Boyan's around 15% on DraftKings. No real ownership coming to Royce O'Neal, which is oddly the more appealing part to me than from DK. What do you want to do with the rest of Utah?
I think the rest of Utah still looks pretty good. Conley at 5,900, I think is fine. You're going to get around 30 minutes from him typically. Clarkson at 5,300 off the bench. Really struggled last game, but still played 28 minutes. He played about 30 minutes the first game that Ingles was out. So I think that, you know, before the entire team was out. So I think that he's still likely to give you 28 to 30 minutes, makes him look decent. Bogdanovich played, has been playing a lot. He played 37 minutes last game. O'Neal played 38. Both of those guys look fine. And then Mitchell at 9,400, I think is fine as well. So Whiteside looks like clearly the top value, but any of Clarkson, O'Neal, Conley, Bogdanovich, Mitchell are, I think, good plays as well.
Yeah, definitely. They're sort of like a similar to Charlotte, different matchup in a way, but like guys that I know that I'm just going to rotate through. But Whiteside clearly on a slightly different stance there. God, I wish Royce O'Neal wasn't so terrible on a per minute basis. Because 6% owned Royce O'Neal at 4,500 is like mildly interesting. And
yeah, it just so happens that he's 36 plus minutes.
Right. Like I have him in for 35. That's something to pay attention to. Any insight on Eric Paschal's minutes here? He played 4 the last time out after playing 37 the day before that.
I assume he plays like 16, 18, somewhere in there.
Okay, yeah. They're in a tricky spot because Norvell Pell played 9 minutes. They didn't play Azubuike in this second one after playing him 16 minutes the game before that. So it's like so much of it comes down to what is Whiteside doing? How many minutes does he have to be out there? And who are they actually willing to play the other minutes at center? Like, do they go small for Eric Paschal? Because they can against the Pistons.
Yeah, well, and also with Gay out. I mean, Gay played 17 minutes last game. I assume Paschal just mostly takes those. House probably picks up a few more.
All right, we're on the same page there, too. Do you have any interest in him? He's flat 3K.
Not really.
Okay. I agree. I mean, I gave him 21 minutes and he becomes nothing. So,
right. Also, for anyone curious, just to point out, you know, because like most of Whiteside's numbers have been off the bench this year, he has played 400 minutes alongside Donovan Mitchell. He's still averaged 1.19 DraftKings points per minute. And we have like a decade long sample of Whiteside being a fantastic fantasy producer.
Yeah. Whether Hassan Whiteside's playing on the bench or playing in a starting lineup, like he's not all that different of a player. He's going to pick and roll and potentially catch a bunch of lobs and try to block a bunch of shots into the bleachers. It doesn't matter if you're playing the starters or the bench guys or whatever. He doesn't become a different guy. It's not like he's coming out there and handling the ball and jumping up to a 30% usage. Like,
right.
Don't worry.
Yeah,
about
I just wanted to put the numbers out there since people seem to, for whatever reason, really care about the last 55 minutes he played instead of the previous, you know, 500.
Yeah. It's crazy. Hey, looks good. If center wasn't so loaded this season, he'd look even better.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the only – like, I have no argument against Whiteside from a production standpoint. The argument is just the ownership, and, you know, it kind of comes down to, like, are you in a better spot getting the good Whiteside game at 50% or whatever, or a better spot getting – not being there and getting a mediocre Whiteside game and then having all of the other, you know, centers? Yeah, like, which one makes you more money if you do it 1,000 times?
Yep. Anything else for the Jazz right now?
No.
All right. To the Pistons we go. God, I hate this team so much. This is one of my least favorite teams in basketball in terms of, like, projecting their rotations, caring about them at all, wanting to even watch them other than Cade at this point. So no Jeremy Grant, no Kelly Olynyk, no Frank Jackson. No more Rodney Magruder, who's going to be on his way to Denver, Bol Bol, making his way to the Pistons. So for all the people that want Bol Bol to play anymore, congratulations. You're probably going to get that and find out that he shouldn't be playing NBA basketball.
I think you found that out the second that a decimated Denver Nuggets team traded him for Rodney Magruder.
Yeah, that's also probably true. Good trade for the Nuggets.
Yeah, I agree.
28% owned Cade Cunningham on FanDuel, where he's 6,600, should make a ton of sense to you. And if that does not make sense to you, I can probably guess why. On DraftKings, no one is pulling any ownership. Highest owned guy is Cade at 6.5%. Makes me want to get to a little bit of Sadiq Bey, even though I find that to be gross. I don't really know who's going to play and succeed and close in these games. Like, we had Corey Joseph close over Killian Hayes the last time out. We had Trey Lyles close their last game, which I thought was interesting. So I kind of feel the way the ownership does in that a lot of these guys look like 5% or 5%ers. If I get to someone like Cade Cunningham, that's fine because he's actually got a pedigree. Everything else for Detroit just looks like shit.
Yeah, that's how I see it. I mean, the rotations are so fluid. Like, if the game's competitive, you assume Bay is in the closing lineup. You assume Cunningham is in the closing lineup. Diallo is most likely in the closing lineup. Outside of that, though, who knows? Like, it could be Stewart. It could be Lyles. It can be Hayes. It can be Joseph. It can be Lee. It can be so many guys. So there's just a ton of risk in rostering any of these guys because in addition to not being very good, the rotations aren't really that consistent either. But Cunningham at 7,700 in tournaments, certainly fine. He's a good producer. He's likely to get the minutes if the game's close. Bay's salary has finally come back down. Still not really interested in getting there, but I don't see a whole lot here. You know, Stewart's somebody that on some slates I would be fine taking, you know, shots at and hope that he gets 30 minutes, but here it's really difficult.
Yeah, it's – you just, like, you don't really know who's going to be in the final lineup for this team other than Sadiq Bey and Cade Cunningham. Like, it could be anybody. They have three different point guards that could be playing well. It could be them. I'd like to assume that it's Killian Hayes. Doesn't appear that it's going to be him. He's 1% owned, so maybe. You silly if you think Bol Bol won't become a solid NBA player with opportunity. I'll tell you what's silly. That opinion. Why do people think he's going to be good? I don't get it.
Why do people not realize the situation he was just in Denver? The entire team is hurt, and he couldn't get on the floor.
Yeah.
Like, Michael Malone sees him in practice every day. And every day, Michael Malone wakes up and is like, damn, I really wish someone on this team could step up and fill in for the 16 guys that are hurt. And then he watches Bol Bol and he's like, yep, not that guy.
Like, where do we want to just say that he's a power forward? Is that the easiest way to describe him? Call him a four?
Sure.
Jeff Green was out. Michael Porter Jr. is out for the year and Bol Bol still wasn't playing on the floor. Like, the two guys ahead of him weren't in and he still didn't get in. Like, not to mention many more guys that were out that were not getting Bol Bol out on the floor. He wasn't highly drafted. If his name was Smith, I don't think that anybody would care about him at all. But because he's Manute Bol's kid, like, people care. Is that the only reason? That's got to be the only reason, right?
I think so. And I mean, people liked him coming out of college from the upside standpoint.
Sure. But I mean,
it's like, I wanted the Wizards to take him just because I don't remember who they took, but it was somebody that probably sucked.
Yeah, like, we can't give them credit for taking a lottery ticket pick, right, when that lottery ticket, it appears to be at best a free ticket and likely just a losing scratch off. I don't know. Good luck, Detroit. Yeah, this chat is crazy. Do you know why he'll be better in Detroit for some reason, JB? Because
he's playing on a G League team.
Yeah, because he's going to get to play. And by the way, if he doesn't get to play for Detroit, every single person should understand what's happening here. Yeah, if you're getting traded for Rodney Magruder, you can quickly figure out what the perceived value of your talent is. Anything else for Detroit?
Nope.
The Indiana Pacers are 5.5-point underdogs in Boston, 215 total. This one might actually be the easiest game to talk about, although we do have one giant hanging piece of news. Malcolm Brogdon is questionable for this one. We still have no Caris LeVert, TJ Warren, TJ McConnell. Lance Stephenson getting a long-term contract for the Pacers. That seems like a good thing to do in 2022. Highest owned guy in this game is Miles Turner at 6.2%. I have Brogdon in right now, as do our current ownership projections. And if Brogdon is in, I think the Pacers might be the worst team on the slate.
Yeah, if Brogdon's in, this looks pretty unappealing. Like, you can still get to a $6,500 Miles Turner, but he takes a step back. Brogdon himself at $7,800, if he's not limited, would look okay, but I'm not very confident in him not being limited, at least right now. Sabonis is priced up. Guys like Sykes and Washington, I think, lose value pretty quickly. I don't imagine getting to a $5,500 Lance Stephenson if Brogdon is back. So, yeah, I don't really see anything here if Brogdon's in.
Mr. OG Crypto says, Lance Stephenson is on fire. Why bring Brogdon back? We'll see. Slight talent difference between guy that wasn't in the league and only is in the league because of COVID and Malcolm Brogdon. Just a hair different, but you know, whatever you want to do with that sort of take.
How quickly does Rick Carlisle get fired if Brogdon is healthy and he's just like starting Lance Stephenson and GM comes down and is like, yo, what are you doing? He's like, Stevenson's been playing well, so we're just not going to run Brogdon.
Yeah, you should fire him on the spot. He shouldn't make it to the first TV timeout if that actually happens.
I mean, I'm not sure Sabonis even takes the floor in that situation.
Of course why rush him back? Of course I'm not Team Lance Stephenson. He's not a real NBA player. What are we talking about here?
You don't even have to be anti-Lance Stephenson.
Yeah.
He shouldn't be playing ahead of Malcolm Brogdon.
Yeah. Lance Stephenson shouldn't play legitimate minutes in the NBA for any team when anyone is at full strength. Like, that's the easiest way to describe this. There are 30 teams in the NBA. We'll just say that everybody runs a 10-man rotation. Lance Stephenson is not one of the best 300 players in basketball. So that's how I feel.
He's not in Malcolm Brogdon's league.
No. Also, he's 5,500 today, so his ass better be out there for a pretty extended amount of time. Yes, you need to ignore that Lance Stephenson has been balling. Oh my God. You guys would bankrupt teams and yourselves in DFS. I wish that we could talk more about Indiana, but they do not look good. If Brogdon happens to be out, you can play some Sabonis and some Turner, maybe Duarte at 4,700.
Maybe some Stevenson at 5,500.
No.
I mean, it's risky.
He's 6,600 on FanDuel today.
I mean, the ceiling is obviously there. The thing is, if he's not playing well, you can very easily get anybody else in the closing lineup over him, and those 29 minutes become 22, and you are in a lot of trouble.
I hope that we don't have any more ridiculous players that Chad is going to attach themselves to. Boston Celtics on the opposite side. Remember when I mentioned that I think the Pacers might be the worst team on today's slate? It might actually just be Boston on the opposite side of this game. So for the Celtics, everybody is available other than Peyton Pritchard. The highest owned guy in this game is Jason Tatum at 6.3%. This is basically right back to whatever day it was that like Tatum looked like the seventh best guy at the top and still had a really good day. Like if you get to Jason Tatum or Jaylen Brown, Sure. Some of these guys are going to end up in a couple of these lineups, but right now I have 3% Tatum, 6% Brown, 3% Smart, 3% Time Lord, 6% Al Horford. And that's to me what it should be. Like, there are no priorities in this Boston game. No one even looks like semi-good, but you rotate through them anyway because it's a 7-game slate.
Yeah, and because there's a difference between medium projections and ceiling, and guys as good as Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown can still go out there and put up scores where you really don't care that they were a little bit overpriced from their median projection. So I think if I had to single out one guy from Boston on DraftKings, Horford would be the first one I get to at 5,800. But even that, you're only expecting 28 to 30 minutes typically. So not any sort of priority, but I think he does have the most favorable price tag of the group.
This is, I'm just tired. Like, this game is awful, and it's primed for overtime and an extra 10 minutes on both sides to make two or three of these guys end up looking actually good. Robert Williams, 7,600 on FanDuel power forward center, I guess is like mildly interesting to me, but there's just nothing here. James Hay with the big time super chat said, tied for third in the 150K fadeaway on DraftKings last night. First time committing to FC Optimizer and Swaptimizer. Thank you both for your analysis, and especially Josh. Yeah, there we go. Your FC tutorial video was super helpful. Thank you both. James, awesome, man. Congratulations. That's a good pull for third last night. So
yeah, it's awesome.
Glad it worked out for you. I've got nothing else here for Indiana or Boston.
Me neither. Stephen Leibowitz pointed out that Horford has not been great lately. That's also true. 0.88 DraftKings points per minute over the last month. I think part of that, I mean, he's never been as good when Tatum and Williams are both in. So I think part of it is just Boston's been a little bit healthier recently. But if you are going to look at shorter, smaller samples, somebody like Horford is someone I think it's reasonable to do it with when you're talking about kind of an older dude that it wouldn't be surprising at all to see him breaking down a little bit. And it was very surprising how well he was playing earlier in the year.
Yeah, I agree with you here. Schroeder also really bad lately. 0.75 FanDuel points per minute over the last 30 days. That is bad.
Opportunities there or just not doing anything?
What do you mean?
Like, is he still, did his usage drop off or?
Oh, I don't, the only thing that I have is just the aggregate, fantasy point per minute rate. I mean, he hasn't played a ton too. He missed, you know, four games, but he's missed six games in the last month. So it is a smaller sample too.
216 minutes for Schroeder, 0.76 DraftKings points per minute, 23.9% usage rate, 47% true shooting.
Yeah, 47%
true also shooting. Also Horford, 44.9% true shooting over that time.
Yeah, that's 9 points lower than what I have him projected for today. All righty, let's talk a little bit about the presenting sponsor of this show. That would be Yahoo Fantasy Sports. And we've got a really good deal going for you guys right now. You can see it on the banner at the top of the screen. Osimo.com/Yahoo-promo. You can get a free month of Osimo Plus Platinum. Now, you need to be new to Yahoo for this one. Sign up for an account using the link in the description of this video. Make a deposit and play. Yahoo will send us your name after you play in your first paid contest. We can then reach out to you via email with a coupon code. If you need immediate access, all you have to do is email support@osimo.com. We can help get you set up. You can also get a free $10 of site credit by using that link in the description. They've got the $75,000 NBA baller going off tonight. We've got DFS tools and projections on our website that will give you your best shot at winning. So thank you very much to Yahoo for being the presenting sponsor of this show. I'm dying at your response to players can be bad as DFS and good real life players. Yeah, that ain't Lance. He's the opposite of that.
This is actually relevant, especially if Brogdon's out. He said, does Lance hurt Sykes? Yes, in the sense that if Lance didn't exist or if Lance was playing poorly, you could be really confident that Sykes is still going to play a ton. With Lance playing well and actually carving out a role off the bench, it makes it so you kind of have to assume that Sykes is only playing like 32 minutes. And there's the chance that, you know, Stevenson could close over him. Like, for example, last game, Stevenson closed in place of Miles Turner. But you could realistically get a game where Turner's in the closing lineup and Stevenson's in over Sykes. So, and then anytime they're on the floor, Stevenson is going to be taking the ball out of his hands as well. So yes, I do think Stevenson is bad for Sykes, not to the point where if Brogdon is out, you can't play Sykes, but yeah, definitely overall just not a very good thing for Sykes.
All righty. San Antonio Spurs. Lots to like here, actually. 6.5-point dogs in New York, 214 total. Massive pace down spot for San Antonio. We've got monster ownership coming to what I think is a pretty obvious spot for Lonnie Walker. 4,400 on FanDuel, 4,200 on DraftKings. Guess I should hit on why Lonnie Walker looks so good. San Antonio will be without Derek White, Keldon Johnson, Devin Vassell, Trey Jones, Thad Young, Zach Collins, and maybe Doug McDermott, who is questionable. I did put McDermott in for this one. We can talk through what we think about McDermott in a bit, but Lonnie Walker looks fantastic today. Best eligibility you're going to find. Price tag works, should play 30 minutes. Do you have any Lonnie Walker takes?
No, just what you said. He played 28 minutes in regulation last game, but there was room for more. He didn't close the first half and still got to 28 minutes. You know, if he gets that last, you know, instead of Tyler Johnson, if Lonnie Walker gets those 4 minutes, you're talking about 32 minutes for him. He's around a 0.9 fantasy point per minute guy. Just looks like a good value at 4,200.
All right. He's an easy piece to talk about. Then we have massive ownership coming in. Maybe not massive, but a lot of ownership coming into the rest of this team. DeJounte Murray, 20% owned on DraftKings. Josh Primo, 18% owned on DK at 3,600. Feels a little high. Kade Bates, Diop is in for 12% ownership. Jakob Poeltl in for 12% ownership. Bryn Forbes in for 14% ownership. Who do you like the most for San Antonio that isn't Lonnie Walker?
Josh Primo.
Is it really? Okay. Talk to me about it. Assuming Doug McDermott in or out?
Out.
Okay.
Assuming Josh Primo starts.
Okay. So we're going to get Murray for sure. We're going to get Jakob Poeltl for sure. I assume Lonnie Walker for sure. If McDermott is in, I assume he's starting.
Yeah. I just don't know if it's for Primo or for Bates Diop.
Right. Okay.
But Primo, so for the season, Primo's at 0.78 DraftKings points per minute. You can argue that maybe decreases a little bit playing with the starters, but outside of DeJounte Murray, this is kind of a bench unit of starters at this point. So not too concerned there. But yesterday, you got 34.5 minutes in regulation from Primo. Popcorn Machine says the Spurs elected to play with four players in overtime. So maybe he played in overtime. I'm not sure. But you got 34.4 minutes. The game before that, he started.
By the way, he played all of it. I have him in for 39.
Okay. So, yeah, it makes sense. The game before that, he started, only played 25.5 minutes, but that's also really deceiving. The Sixers blew them out, so Primo subbed out with about 4 minutes to go in the fourth quarter. But he also picked up his third foul with 7 minutes and 13 seconds to go in the second. So, conceivably, he lost like 11 to 12 minutes in that game. To garbage time / foul, still played 25 minutes. I think, especially if McDermott's out, that you're getting a lot of run for Josh Primo here at 3,600.
Okay. You prefer Primo to Forbes? I assume the answer is yes.
Yes, because he's a little bit cheaper and because I just trust the minutes more. I mean, Forbes played 25 minutes off the bench yesterday.
All righty. Yeah, I'm very interested to see. I think the most interesting piece of this game is going to be Doug McDermott, because we've seen Doug McDermott be very different for the Spurs than he has been previously in his career, like for the Pacers. I don't know if Keldon Johnson is the reason for that, but it wouldn't surprise me if we got a little bit more Doug McDermott with the ball if he is back. McDermott is 3,700 small forward eligible, 3,800 on FanDuel, small forward, power forward. I don't think he's fantastic, but if he is back and playing the 26 minutes that he kind of was just playing pretty regularly at the four, I find him interesting if he's really going to be as unowned as he appears to be at right now at 2.5%. Don't know if I could read into it that much, but I could just see his role changing with these guys being out.
Yeah, I mean, I could see that too. I'm not going to ever love McDermott at 3,700, especially because, like, if he's back, the issue you run into is that there's just fewer minutes to go around, so it makes all of Walker, Primo, Bates Diop, McDermott, Forbes, like, they all just become a little bit more volatile because it's even easier to run, like, whoever the hot hand is out there for more minutes. So they all would look fine if McDermott's back. Everyone looks better, obviously, except McDermott if McDermott's out.
If Josh Primo isn't in the starting lineup, were you looking at like 24 minutes, 26 minutes, something like that?
I would guess like 26, yeah.
Okay. Just checking. Interesting, Kate Bates, Diop. I guess you're just sort of interested in whichever one of Primo or Diop are starting.
Yeah. Bates, Diop's another one where, like, if McDermott's in, I think it's likely that you're getting 26, 28 minutes. If McDermott's out, you could potentially get more. He played about 32 minutes in regulation last game.
Yeah, played 37 in the full, so I assume he just played the full five. I like it. I'm very intrigued by that. It's just going to be a spot that we're going to really need to pay attention to. Talk to me about Murray. 21.5% ownership right now. Like, I like him. I think that I have him projected pretty well. Not so sure I agree with the ownership.
He's played 466 minutes without Derek White on the floor this year. He's averaged 1.5 DraftKings points per minute. 27.1% usage rate, 42.1% assist percentage, 14% rebounding percentage. I think he looks really good.
So I have him in that same spot clear across the board. I think the problem is he needs to be adjusted pretty aggressively due to the pace of this matchup. The Knicks are dead last in pace now. They're 30th ranked. As of late, it's been about 93.5 possessions per game. San Antonio is fourth in the league in pace. So we're getting basically one of the big, we're getting San Antonio's biggest potential drop in pace by playing this game. So that's actually discounting me for Murray a little bit. I've got him at 1.38 FanDuel points per minute in this matchup, but that's also with the same rates you just mentioned, 27% usage, 41% assist rate, 14% rebounding rate. I'm a little nervous because of this spot and the way that the Knicks have been playing right now, that there's not enough possessions on the floor today.
I think that's fair. The biggest, like, I guess argument I would make against Murray is just that he is getting the ownership just from guys we've talked about in that price range. I don't think that DeJounte Murray should be pulling 21% ownership if LaMelo Ball is only pulling five.
That I completely agree with. I don't, like, I have Murray projected slightly better, but I'm obviously going to get to more LaMelo Ball in a 150 max scenario because I don't think that these guys are all that different. Like, I've got DeJounte Murray's boom at 20%. Like, we can quibble over this, but DeJounte Murray's boom at 20%, LaMelo at 17%. They can't be 4-1 in ownership then. It's just a very natural play to flip that sort of thing. And that is what I'm doing right now. So I like you pointing out LaMelo. I think that makes a lot of sense. And again, it's not to say that I don't like DeJounte Murray or that he's not like a really good per minute guy, but I don't love this matchup. And if everybody's going to already own him, it's easy to go somewhere else.
Yeah.
San Antonio's tough today.
The thing with Murray, and like we talk about it a lot, typically just, and obviously, you know, there's always exceptions, but as a general rule, it's easier to get away from popular expensive players than popular cheap players because there's just going to be more guys in that price range that even if they don't look quite as good, they have the same ceiling, they have the same or similar range of outcomes. When you talk about, for example, when Whiteside was 3,500, there were zero other $3,500 players on the entire slate that average 1.2 DraftKings points per minute and can play 30 minutes. DeJounte Murray at 9,700, 1.5 fantasy points per minute is great. 34 minutes or so is great. Makes him look really good. There's plenty of other guys around 9K that are likely to play 34 minutes or so and have the potential to get you 1.5 fantasy points per minute.
Yeah. We also have Donovan Mitchell sandwiched in between LaMelo and DeJounte Murray. Same exact sort of guy, projection, etc. Also projected for less ownership than Murray. So I am playing the pace game in that one and sort of avoiding Murray in the same sort of volume as the public. We'll go to the Knicks side of this one now. This one gets a little complicated too, and I'm curious to get your thoughts. Q tags on Kemba Walker, Evan Fournier, and Nerlens Noel. Derrick Rose obviously still out. I don't really care about Noel. We know exactly how to project, or generally speaking, we know exactly how to project this Knicks center rotation. So that one just handles itself. But let's assume for a second that Kemba Walker is in. Do you even have a guess as to how many minutes he's playing? Because he's either coming back in as a backup point guard and playing 20 minutes in this first one, or he's going to get straight Tibbs and play 38.
If he starts, I think he's playing starter minutes.
I agree. I don't have him starting right now. Not that I have any comfort in that guess, but like it just feels like they can't just bring him in here to play and get hurt again.
Right. Yeah, I think that's fair. But yeah, if he starts, I think you're getting 30+.
Okay. Yeah, I gave him 24. I continued to maintain the big minutes to Alec Burks for 34. Same for RJ Barrett, Julius Randle. I don't think anybody is curious about how to project, but I think let's talk about Alec Burks. Assuming Alec Burks starts, 5,800 on FanDuel, 5,600 shooting guard, small forward, 9% owned right now. Probably don't have that starting lineup before lock. So like if everything holds and we don't know Knicks starters by lock, I think Alec Burks' ownership is in and around that number. How do you feel about Burks?
I think he's kind of interesting. Like, he's shooting guard, small forward, eligible on DraftKings. He's only 5,600. If he starts, you're probably getting at least 34 minutes or so. He's around a 0.9 fantasy point per minute guy. So, like, he's not anyone that I want to get too carried away with, but that price tag is very favorable if you're going to be able to get him at low ownership and if he's in the starting lineup.
Yeah, that to me, he's the most interesting guy if he is starting.
Yeah.
You know, RJ Barrett continues to look solid. He doesn't have the best eligibilities on DraftKings, so it's a little crazy to get there. I don't have a ton of interest in Evan Fournier, but at 4,800, if, you know, it's the same as the Boston game, sign me up. Do you really like anything else here from New York?
I do not. Julius Randle, 9,100 is a hell of a price drop.
It is. Yeah, it's just, it's good game script for the Knicks. Major pace up spot for them, at least, which is nice to see. And you know you're getting 36 minutes out of Randle, or potentially 37 or 38.
11% ownership on Randle at 9,100 actually seems kind of low.
Yeah, I'm a little surprised that he's not popping up a little bit more for me. I'm guessing it's just he can only play power forward. And when you're limited to only one position, it locks you down a little bit more than you would like it to. So I have no problem getting there. Randle, Burks, Barrett, Fournier, even a little bit of $4,700 Mitchell Robinson, that's there for me. I'm assuming Mitchell Robinson starts. I gave Noel the backup minutes. You guys know what to do if it's not the case. What do we do with this New York Knicks team if we start losing some of these guys? What if Kemba Walker is out? What if Evan Fournier is also out? Fournier had to sit out their last game, coming off of that 42-minute affair. What happens if these guys don't play? Who are we jamming in then? Because obviously then Burks still looks really good. RJ Barrett looks even better. Those minutes aren't going anywhere. Emmanuel quickly has to jump to the list of guys we want to get to a lot, right?
Yeah, for sure. Quickly got the start in place of Fournier last game. I was kind of surprised. I thought Grimes would get the start and Quickly would play more minutes off the bench, because typically that's what they've been doing. But he moved into the starting lineup. He played 37 minutes, didn't even play down the stretch, and still got the 37 minutes. So he would look excellent at 4,900 if he's starting again. RJ Barrett's minute projection goes from, you know, low to mid 30s to upper 30s if Fournier is out, and especially if both Fournier and Kemba are out. Grimes at 3,400, you know, even coming off the bench last game, he played 28 minutes. I think that part of that was garbage run. I think that on average, you're probably getting like 22 to 24 minutes from him. But yeah, it opens up a lot if Kemba and Fournier are out.
If Kemba and Fournier are in, is Grimes even playing today?
I doubt it.
Okay. Just making sure I'm looking at this correctly. Pay attention to the news throughout the day. This is going to be important. There's a lot of swing pieces here. Just depending on the way that this news breaks. So keep your eyes peeled for that. 31 and a half. That's ridiculous.
Somebody said, look at Randall's fantasy box scores. That's why he's 9,100. I can't think of anything I would be less interested in looking at.
1.05 FanDuel points per minute over the past 30 days. Not all that lower than what you would expect his normal rates to be. So, but yes, that is not something that I would be paying attention to at all. By the way, Randle, 8,800 on FanDuel, power forward and center. That's a nice price and positional combo.
And yes, Jeremy Savage, Joel Embiid is there for $1,900 more at a more difficult position.
Yeah. Comparable though, right?
I would rather play Embiid if someone just asks me if I'd rather have Embiid or Randle though.
Yeah, for sure. I don't have anything else here for the Knicks. So let's talk about this comp to Julius Randle. That would be Joel Embiid. Embiid and the Knicks are 10.5-point favorites in Houston, 225 total. It's a shame there's so much center talent, because Embiid looks incredible in this spot. We still have no Tyrese Maxey. We still have no Shake Milton. Isaiah Joe is off the injury report. Joel Embiid, 10-9 on FanDuel, 11K on DraftKings. He's about 15% owned across both sites. I have him in on FanDuel for today because of this matchup against Houston, the pace-up nature, the additional rates for having no point guards. 1.76 FanDuel points per minute for Embiid, and he might be like the fifth best center today.
Yeah, but I really like getting him. Like, he should absolutely destroy this team. And he's another one where, you know, yeah, Whiteside is a really good play, but it goes back to, you still probably need like 40 from Whiteside. If Whiteside goes for 30, like, Portis can destroy that, Nurkic can destroy that, and Embiid can 2.5 or like double that at least.
Yeah.
He looks great here. You mentioned the point guards being out. You do get an elevated assist percentage for Embiid as well. He looks great. It's just a matter of prioritizing where you're spending your money. The opportunity cost to center is higher than everywhere else, just like it always is. So, like, basically, even though Embiid, for example, on DraftKings is $1,000 less expensive than Giannis, it's more like they're the same price because of what you're giving up to get to Embiid, whereas you can roster Giannis at power forward and then have Whiteside, Nurkic, Portis, whoever. So, you know, it's tough to get there from that sense, but that's also why he's only projected for 18% ownership.
Yeah, like, I think the ownership is about right. It's hard to really want to push for that more. But on the surface, just looking at this game and the way that he's set up, it is an exceptional spot. My real problem is that I just prefer Jusuf Nurkić so much more than I prefer Embiid today relative to salary. It's close, clearly, and I'm getting to Embiid. I thought Embiid, when I first got to Embiid as I worked my way through this slate, I thought I was just going to get like boatloads because of where his rates were coming in. And that's just what center looks like now. We will be getting boatloads of the rest of Philly, however. And 20. Go ahead.
I'll say Embiid is almost just like the opposite end from Whiteside, where, you know, Whiteside, it's like you can get a good point per dollar score, but conceivably it could be irrelevant. White or Embiid, you can get the highest score at the position, but it could just end up not mattering. Like if Embiid at 11K goes for 62, but Nurkic at 7K goes for 50 and Portis goes for 50, you're probably going to be have better lineups, you know, where Whiteside goes for 40, you're probably going to have better lineups with those other guys.
Yeah, absolutely. That's that really is the issue. If one of these value centers or even two of these value centers are what they're supposed to, or like what they can be at a peak, that's where it becomes really problematic for Embiid. Korkmaz, easy to get to, 20% owned across both sites. And I think that's more than warranted. Matisse Thybulle is 4,300 on FanDuel, where he's 23% owned. He's 3,900 on DraftKings with dual eligibility, only 11% owned. If you ever want to know how valuable steals are to someone like Matisse Thybulle, check out that ownership on FanDuel, where he's got worse positions and a worse salary and twice as much ownership. Tobias Harris, 7,800 on FanDuel, 8K on DraftKings. Interesting enough. Seth Curry, about 10% owned across both sites. Interesting enough. What are your priorities for Philly? Because I think of those five guys, you kind of want all of them.
Yeah, I think so too. I'm really interested in Curry. Like, you get elevated assist opportunities. You get just the ball in his hands a bit more, which we know can lead to more usage as well. He's played 223 minutes now without Maxey or Milton on the floor. He's averaged 1.02 DraftKings points per minute, 22.5% usage rate, 27.9% assist percentage, and he's playing a lot of minutes as well. This is a good matchup. The salary has come up to 6,600, so it's much more a tournament play than anything else, but I do think you continue to see increased production for him.
I gotta ask you this question. Houston, tough matchup for 76ers, believe it or not. I went with not.
Yeah, it's a not for me.
Yeah, I don't even know how we could land on that as an actual statement, but that's neither here nor there. Is Korkmaz the easiest guy to get to here from Philly?
Probably. I mean, 4,900, expect him to play around 34 minutes. Pace up spot, should get plenty of open looks.
Yeah, that's...
He actually has played the most minutes on the team without Maxey or Milton. 0.82 DraftKings points per minute. He's around a 0.9 fantasy point per minute guy and starts alongside Embiid over the last couple of years.
Talk to me tomorrow about this matchup as if one individual game's result. I wouldn't gloat when I'm right. I wouldn't gloat the opposite way. It just isn't a tough matchup. What's Christian Wood doing against Joel Embiid defensively? I mean, Christian Wood doesn't play defense just in general. I don't know. Yeah, absolutely. Embiid's going to put him in the basket. Oh, man. Lots of Philly here because contrary to chat belief, this is a great matchup for the Philadelphia 76ers. Houston plays fast-ish, and they don't have a good defense at all. So, and probably going to miss a lot of shots, leading to a lot of potential defensive rebounds for Joel Embiid. Because
the only like argument I could see for it being a quote-unquote bad matchup would be if you're strictly talking DFS and you're afraid that like the game's gonna be over after three quarters, which is also a crazy take, like to be that worried about it, but. That would be the angle. I don't think anything that happens on the basketball court is bad for the Sixers here.
No. Everything on paper is great, other than the fact that they're 10.5-point favorites and this one could be over early. Otherwise, there is no mechanism for this one. And then we go to Houston. The Houston Rockets are, as we mentioned, 10.5 point underdogs with this 225 total. Oh my God, it's 10:56.
Yeah, hurry the hell up, Josh. I've got an NFL show to do.
Yeah, I don't know how we timed that one out. I just missed an entire extra chunk of time. Whew. All right, let's go. Well, we're going a little long.
I would have guessed it was 10:35.
Yeah, I don't.
This is the first time I've ever enjoyed doing a show with you, and time just flies.
Thanks, man. Jordan, you got to be in my ear next time. Normally, I'm all over this. I didn't even notice until right now. All right, favorite plays on Houston. I think Christian Wood and Kevin Porter both look pretty solid. They're about 20% owned. I've got a little interest in Jayshon Tate and Jalen Green, both on DK. But I'm not going to too much here outside of the starters.
Yeah, kind of. It's similar to what we've seen recently with Houston. Christian Wood's yet another good center option. I prefer Nurkic at that price point, but obviously Wood has a massive ceiling as well. The rest of these guys, Porter, Green, Tate, Gordon, They get into some lineups. There is, you know, positive correlation if you are playing Sixers guys. I think this is a pretty good team. Like, it's not a must, but if you were to set a rule, like, if you get two of the more expensive Sixers, like, I think you're fine if you do something like Embiid, Korkmaz, I wouldn't care. But, like, if I have Embiid, Harris, or Embiid, Curry or something, maybe I want to just run it back with a Rocket because those guys are expensive enough where if they both have the games that I want them to have, Houston probably made it a competitive game. But yeah, just sort of some tournament filler, I guess. And then also Kenny Martin Jr., just, you know, be aware when you're, if you're, you know, using Excel that he has 18 different names.
All right. Apologies for running long here. We're going to take an extra 15 minutes to finish this one up. This is the problem with a 7-game slate. Like on big slates, it's very easy for us to ignore a lot. And on little slates, we just have enough time. But in this middle one, you get this middle ground where you kind of got to talk about a lot of people and then right. You end up stretching and then you end up late. But NFL recap show can lose 15 minutes, right?
Yeah.
All right. It doesn't matter to you. I know you're on them both one way or the other. So Cleveland Cavs, 4.5 point favorites in Sacramento, 218 total for the Cavs. They're pretty much at full strength, barring like actual injured players. We do have a questionable tag on Darius Garland for today. I have him in for right now. He's 7,700 on FanDuel and 20% owned, which I think is fully warranted. Otherwise, 10% Evan Mobley is the highest owned guy on DraftKings. Are you seeing any real priorities for Cleveland here? Which I don't, which is a shame against Sacramento.
Yeah, I don't see priorities. I kind of like when teams are like this against Sacramento because I like being able to just sort of get to low-owned guys that are in a really, really good spot. They're not the most likely to succeed, but it's a fantastic matchup. I mean, Garland at 8,900, if he's in and giving you 34 minutes or so, he's got a ceiling there. I would get to LaMelo first. I would get to Murray first, even though they're a little bit more expensive. But if you need just a high upside, low-end guy, Garland fits the bill. Evan Mobley, power forward center, looks pretty good at 7,300. Not like a top play, but certainly someone with a high ceiling. So, yeah, nothing that stands out from Cleveland. But certainly in tournaments, if you're getting to some, you know, Garland, Mobley, I think that's fine.
By the way, your boy Marquise Chris signed a third 10-day with the Mavs. So congrats to you for that one. Yeah, I wish I had more to talk about here for Cleveland. I thought they would stand out a little bit more, but they're kind of just priced where they should be. On the Sacramento side, we got Terrence Davis back finally. That didn't prove to be all that interesting. Rashawn Holmes is questionable for this one, as is Mo Harkless. We also got Chimezie Metu back. I had a lot of trouble trying to figure out who were like the final two pieces in this lineup, but I don't think it matters all that much. What I think we want to do is play Tyrese Halliburton, 6,800 on FanDuel, 6,900 on DraftKings. Play a little bit of De'Aaron Fox or maybe a little bit more at 7,600, although he scares the hell out of me. And then Harrison Barnes is 5K on FanDuel, pulling a lot of ownership. I get it. I'm guessing I have Holmes in with Alex Len basically as his straight backup. Bagley continues to play like non-significant minutes. Are there a lot of priorities here for you from Sacramento?
I hate the Kings here. Do keep an eye on De'Aaron Fox's status. He was like a late addition to the injury report yesterday as a game time decision. He ended up playing. Now you have a back-to-back. We certainly have the potential for something weird to happen there, but I don't like the matchup against Cleveland. I don't really love the rotations that Sacramento is running right now. You're just getting a little bit like deeper rotations than they were running earlier in the year. So you're talking about like 30 to 32 minutes for Barnes typically, makes him sort of mediocre at 5,400. Fox at 7,600 is fine, but there's a million good guard options. Same goes for Halliburton. I don't really see much at all on DraftKings from Sacramento.
Yeah, I think we're on the same page here. If Fox is in, I really still do like that $7,600 price tag and 9% ownership, but I just continue to go back to the well for De'Aaron Fox. Can't really help it. We've got Davion Mitchell projected for 12% ownership at 3,200. I don't want that, but
yeah, why?
I have no idea.
I mean, it maybe just fits in nicely or it's going to change, but yeah, I mean, he's going to play like 20 minutes probably.
Yep. All righty. Let's close this one out. The Brooklyn Nets are 10.5-point favorites in Portland, 225 total. Kyrie Irving able to play in this one. Lucky him. I don't think we're really playing much of anything on DraftKings, but FanDuel got out in front of this. 7,800 for Kyrie, projected for 12% ownership. James Harden is 9,400 on FanDuel, 28% owned, which I think is about right. Durant, though, still 11K. I don't really know how you go to that one. I don't know how you go to anything else from Brooklyn at this point. Aldridge is questionable, so maybe Nick Claxton becomes like slightly interesting, but can you get to Harden and Durant today?
In tournaments, I still think it's okay. I mean, Harden played 40 minutes against the Pacers. Durant played 41 in the game where Kyrie played 32 minutes. The production on average is going to decrease, but the salary's also dropped. And just because average production drops doesn't mean that you're not going to have any massive James Harden or Kevin Durant games with Kyrie in. So I think as long as the ownership is relatively low, I don't mind taking shots at them in tournaments. They're not priorities for me, but Durant right now projected for 6% ownership on DraftKings, Harden at 9, Kyrie at 1. Mixing them in, I think, makes sense. It is a very good matchup, and there's still just a massive ceiling for all these guys because of their talent.
Assuming you feel the same way, though, on FanDuel, $9,400 Harden, very easy to get to.
Yeah. Can you get to anything? If Aldridge is out, Claxton doesn't become a priority. He kind of just becomes like a mediocre Hassan Whiteside pivot.
Yeah. Is there anything else there? Cam Thomas, 3,800, anything like that?
No, I'm good.
All right. Just checking. All right. Well, let's close it out with Portland then. No Dame, no CJ, no Norm Powell, no Larry Nance. I have Yusuf Nurkic in basically every lineup I have right now on FanDuel and DraftKings. He's 18% owned on FanDuel, 34 on DK. And honestly, like, I don't even know if that's enough, but it is a lot. He's just a completely different person with no Dame, no CJ out there. Every single rate changes. Fill everybody in on Nurkic.
Yeah, he looks really good. He's 7K. He's getting 34% ownership. I think he deserves it. He has a 32% chance of being in the optimal lineup right now. He is playing a lot of minutes. He played 38.5 minutes last night. Since the start of this season, he's played, I'm not even going to factor in Norman Powell, but that's even more usage available. Nurkic just played 189 minutes without McCollum or Lillard on the floor. He's averaged 1.33 DraftKings points per minute, 27.7% usage rate, 21% rebounding percentage, 24% assist percentage. He just should be much more expensive because you're getting increased production and you're getting increased playing time, and the salary hasn't really moved to account for either.
Yeah. Not to mention, we're in a pace-up spot for Portland right out of the gate. We've got what should be a fantastic rebound spot for him against a Nets team that doesn't exactly profile as like a team that crashes the boards a lot. They are 21st in offensive rebounding and defensive rebounding. I've got Nurk projected for like 19-15 or something crazy. Like, I think he looks absolutely exceptional today. I want him on both sites, but yeah, that's not it. Like, go ahead.
I would say the only like possible argument against Nurkic, I think, is kind of the same one as against Whiteside. It's just there are so many good centers that you can build very, very good lineups that don't have Nurkic. And if for one reason or another he has a bad game, a third of the field is dead. So that's always kind of appealing. But, I mean, he is very, very wildly underpriced for his current role.
Yeah. Anthony Simons is 6,400 on DraftKings, which is quite a bit cheaper than his FanDuel price. He's 20% owned. Nas Little is 20% owned. I think that's fully warranted. Robert Covington's about 15 across both sites. I think that's fully warranted. Ben McLemore is 22% owned on DraftKings at 3,300. He scares me a little bit in this one because he doesn't have to be a guy that gets anything out of Portland, but they're slowly but surely running out of bodies. And Ben McLemore might just be playing enough minutes where it really does matter. How do you feel about the rest of Portland?
I think McLemore is probably my favorite value that we've had so far.
Okay.
At least amongst like the really cheap guys. So yeah, I mean value in the sense of like $3,300, not underpriced, because that would be guys like Whiteside. But he started yesterday, played 25 minutes, but he picked up fouls. He picked up his second and third foul with 2 minutes and 55 seconds to go in the second quarter, lost about 3 minutes there, picked up his fourth foul 3 minutes into the third, lost a bunch of minutes there, still got to 25 minutes. I think you're looking at 30 plus from McLemore if he can stay out of foul trouble. They haven't really wanted to play Dennis Smith Jr. alongside Anfernee Simons. And as long as that's the case, there have to be minutes for Ben McLemore because this team needs offense. Tony Snell's not filling that gap. CJ Ellaby could, but he's behind McLemore. Like they're only real options to fill the scoring gap that is vacated by Powell, McCollum, and Lillard is Ben McLemore and CJ Ellaby and Dennis Smith Jr. As long as Dennis Smith Jr. is basically just Anfernee Simons' backup, there have to be minutes there for Ben McLemore. And then beyond that, you know, Nas Little, Robert Covington, both these guys should be playing a lot. Both are relatively inexpensive for the minutes they're going to play. So they just look like pretty good options. And then with Anfernee Simons, one thing that is really interesting, he'd be a good option one way or the other with McCollum and Simon and Lillard out. He's playing a ton of minutes, but he's really taken a step forward this year as far as his aggressiveness when these guys are not on the floor. He has a 28.5% usage rate in 228 minutes without McCollum or Lillard. He's averaged 1.05 DraftKings points per minute. Also has a 25.6% assist percentage. So, yeah, he's always been someone that you'd be interested in with those guys out. But I think he looks even better this year than he has in the past.
Anything else you want to touch on here from Portland?
No, just one of the best teams on the slate all around.
Crazy slate coming on tonight. You've got you on the NFL recap show immediately after this one ends, which should have been 7 minutes ago. We've got GPP videos and injury report stuff coming out later, plus deeper dive for you, right?
Yep.
All righty. Well, that'll do it, everybody. Apologies for running long. This one's a pretty interesting slate. A lot of talking points. We'll be hitting on all of it a little bit later. Good luck tonight, everybody. Thank you to Yahoo for being the presenting sponsor of this show. Coming up next on this channel, NFL recap for the final week of the regular season, week 18. Adam and Eric are breaking it all down. Good luck tonight, everybody. We'll talk to you later.